Welcome to Shout Out, out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello, very warm welcome back to Shout Out. We've just finished the Shout Out Listeners Awards. I'll give you a bit of a rundown of the top awards shortly. On this week's show, Steph chats to Peter Darney, not in Welsh, about his new film, plus Queer Street, as takes us back to the LGBTQIA people who made a difference. All here in the next hour, right here on Shout Out.
No more doobie doobin.
I'm a knackered.
I bet you are. Yep. And Terry, get off the dance floor. Come over here. Good Lord, he's been up on the tables as well.
Busy bopping away over there.
Calm down, Terry. Come on.
Fun though, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it is special, isn't it? Like you said, Andy, later on in the show, right at the end, we'll be announcing all those winners. If you were not there or you're listening to this on one of our other stations over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. If you did miss it, you missed a brilliant, brilliant thing. You should come. Come next time. They're every 2 years. So the next ones will start in 2026 and be awarded in beginning of 27.
Yep. Yeah. How are you doing, Terry?
I'm all right, thank you.
Good. That took you a while to find a microphone. Were you asleep?
Very, very exhausted.
Oh, yeah, bet you are, yeah. Yeah, running around showing people their placements and...
That's right.
And bouncer on the door. Any trouble out there on the street, Terry?
It's rough old market.
I hear there's a lot of gay people around.
Oh, holy gays.
Oh, yes. Which is what makes it wonderful, of course.
Indeed. Indeed. Right, we've got some. We got a great interview, actually. And I nearly done it in Welsh, as I pointed out to Terry. Now, Terry's been giving me Welsh lessons, didn't you, Terry?
I did indeed.
Yes, I did wonder why you put that in there. In the opening, that you didn't do it in Welsh. I was kind of.
Well.
Do you know any Welsh? Do you speak any Welsh words?
Of course I do. I'm fluent. Yaki dar.
Yaki dar.
Yeah. Lanfair Porthgwyn, etc. Go, go, go.
And my grandma used to say Achavi every time we did something wrong. Oh my God, or something similar, doesn't it?
It's kind of like a yuck.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I know, because she used to tell us that we had to call it by polite things when you did a fart. And in Welsh, it's called a bublek.
A bublek? Okay.
A bublek.
Yeah. Okay, Terry, what does that mean?
It means fart.
I don't know.
It means fart.
How do you know your English? Isn't it funny how the people who speak foreign languages, the first thing they teach you is swear words?
Yes, I did learn French swear words at the ripe old age of about 7, I think.
Yeah. Well, I learned to swear in Polish quite early on.
I don't know if you get away with swearing in a different language on British radio, would you? Would it still be classed as swearing, I presume, just because it's in a foreign language?
Who's listening depends on whether they report you or not, or whether they take offence, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, look at the French and Spanish. They use the F word constantly.
They do,
well,
they do, yes.
Even in jingles.
They do, yeah. Effing this and effing that and effing
steady, Terry. Yeah. Good Lord, my sensibilities.
Steph's precious ears.
See, Andy knows. Right, let's have the first interview, and we will be back after this.
Cool. The Shout Out Podcast.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
Now, we've got something really special now. This is the first LGBTQIA film that's been filmed in Welsh. Now, I'm going to try hard not to break out into Welsh. Obviously, I'm very fluent in Welsh, as you can tell from my Bristolian accent. Though our news editor is reasonably fluent, and he did teach me a few sentences, one being Landfair, Porthcawl, etc., etc., Gogogog, and Yaki Dar. So I'm actually semi-fluent, I think, and I'm joined by Peter Darney, who you can't see, but has got tears in his eyes. I don't know whether that's that he's about to cry or laugh. Peter, welcome to Shout Out.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, tell us a bit about this. Is very special, isn't it? Because you had funding from S4C.
It is the first Welsh language queer film that's got into BFI Flair, which is obviously the biggest queer film festival in Europe. So we're really, really excited about it. And it's also the first film in the trans narrative, a first film in the Welsh language that looks at the trans experience, we think.
Wow. Wow, so you got some firsts in there.
We did get some firsts in there, yes, we did.
Right, now you're directing, or you directed the film, because it is being released. Can you tell us how you got into directing? You know, growing up in school, did you always have a penchant for, like, filmmaking?
So, at school, I really wanted to be an actor and a writer, but I did do some directing at school as well. So I suppose that, yeah, my first experience of directing was at when I was at sixth form, actually, when the school play got cancelled, and I went back to work with the I decided to go and work with the sort of school age kids to put on a play with them so that it wasn't cancelled anymore. So that was my first experience. But I trained as an actor. So I went to drama school. I went to the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama. And I worked as an actor for a few years after that. Did a lot of radio drama, which I really loved. But I was feeling like I wasn't like creatively fulfilled. I didn't have enough ability to shape the whole picture, and that was something that I really wanted to do and explore. So I went back to uni and did a master's in theatre directing, and then I was working as a theatre director up until about like 2018, 2019, and then I started making my way across to film and TV. And I was desperate to write, and I hadn't written for such a long time, but I wrote a play called Five Guys Chilling, which sort of did really well at the King's Head and transferred to like Dublin and off Broadway and Sydney and Toronto. And so I sort of really started to feel like writing and directing was something that I really loved to do. But I started making my move over to film and TV. And so I made my first short film funded with BFI and Film Cymru and BBC Wales, which was a short film called G-Flat, starring Richard Wilson, which also got into BFI Flair, which was really, really exciting. So this is now my second time at the festival. And then I was recently like a second unit director on a Welsh queer adoption drama called Lost Boys and Fairies, and got to do like loads of very, very exciting stuff on that. And the producers of TEF had seen Lost Boys and Fairies and had a commission from S4C to make a short film. They wanted a trans comedy. They wanted something that was really uplifting and positive, because so many films deal with the more difficult elements of that experience. And they wanted something that was not that ignored those elements, but did things in a very uplifting and funny way. And so that's how I got involved with TEF. I was asked to direct it, come on board and work with Leo Drayton. He's a wonderful writer and turned out to be our lead actor.
Wow. Yes, I saw that in the notes, that he's the lead. Yeah. Was it very difficult to put together a group of actors that were fluent in Welsh?
No. It wasn't difficult. So the producers So I'm not a fluent Welsh speaker myself, but I'm doing dusky. I'm learning, and like I'm not bad, but like I'm not fluent by any means. But the producers are both fluent Welsh speakers and are really connected in that world of Welsh television and film. So they pulled some people across into it. And I happen to know the guy who plays the vicar is a friend of mine who lives in London, who's a fluent Welsh speaker. And I was like, he has to be the vicar. He's like 6'6" tall and 6'6" wide. And everyone was like, Peter, are you sure? And I was like, yes, I'm sure it's going to work really well. And it's turned out really, really well. Mm. And then we also, our Jesus was a go-go boy that I just only knew on Instagram, actually, called Daddy Milan. And we reached out to him on Insta and were like, hey, do you want to come and be Jesus? And he was like, sure, why not? So that's kind of how it happened, really, a mixture of the producers and me knowing a couple of people and us talking Leo into, because Leo's not normally an actor, Leo's a writer. And I was like, Leo, this is your story. Like, you have to. You don't have to if you don't want to, but I really think you should think about it. And he came on board as the actor as well. So like it actually casting was quite easy for us.
Yeah. It is so wonderful that money is available to keep minority languages alive and culture, because I think that will be the end of any country that's got within it minority languages or even accents. That if that gets leveled out and we all start speaking some form of English, that in alone is special. Can you tell us a little bit about the plot?
So it's very loosely based on a true story, something that happened to Leo. So after his top surgery, he was changing his dressings and he thought his nipple fell off and the dog ate it. I know.
Pause for a bit. I'm not sure whether I should be shocked, feeling quite ill or laughing there.
Well, it turned out that it was just a scab, so it was all right. But Leo's sort of extended that story into like a kind of like a quest for a father and son to recalibrate their relationship now that he's had his top surgery, facilitated by a naughty dog and a transphobic vicar.
Transphobic vicar. Every film should have a transphobic vicar. Now, before we go on to social media and where people can watch the film, have you got anything in the works planned for the future?
So I've just been commissioned to write another feature film. So this is a short film. Teth is a short film, but I've just been commissioned to write a feature film called The Only Gay Porn Star in Upper Cymdeithas, which is loosely based on the true story of how I lost my virginity to an American porn star at Christmas in a rural Welsh village one year.
Lord, you've got our attention, Peter. You've got our attention.
So I'm writing a rom-com about that at the moment. And I'm also working with producer Adam Knopf, who was a producer on Lost Boys and Fairies, the producer of Lost Boys and Fairies. And we're working on an adaptation of my play, Five Guys Chilling. So we're working on a film that looks at the chemsex experience and issues around addiction. So two very, very, very different projects that I'm writing right now. Yeah, so like that's what I'm working on.
Wow, you're busy.
Well, there's always room for a cheeky offer if anyone's listening. And
there you go. Okay, socials and where people can see the film, Peter.
So at the moment, I'm afraid you'll only see the film if you come to BFI Flare on Sunday the 30th. It's doing a festival run at the moment. So it's not available online until it finishes that, but it'll be about a year's time before it goes online. And then it will also be broadcast by S4C and be on BBC iPlayer as well in about a year's time. But right now, festivals across the country, watch this space. But if you can't wait a year and you fancy watching something now, my last short film, G-Flat, starring Richard Wilson and Aladap Stefan, you can watch on Channel 4 On Demand. If you just search G-Flat, you'll find it on there.
Okay, excellent. We got it. Peter Darney, thank you so much for joining us on Shout Out.
Thank you for having me. It's been lovely.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
This is Shout Out News. Welcome along. Andrew Chaskowski is a name to conjure with in the world of LGBTQIA plus clubbing and the avant-garde art scenes for a long time. Indeed, he is even featured in a surviving archive recording of Network 21, a brief but highly influential illegal pirate television station in London from 1986. Now Andrew is at the Electric Brixton, where he welcomes revelers this coming Maundy Thursday. That's the night before Good Friday. Why? Well, London scene magazine QX reports that Love Muscle is back. The famed queer club of the celebratory mid-90s, a time of queer visibility and fight back, will feature legendary 90s dance music icons JX, performing tracks such as Son of a Gun and other clubbing tunes that made it off the dance floor and onto commercial radio in the UK, smashing through the charts. Hostess Yvette is back on the doors, and the entire event runs from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. House music DJs will be playing pumping floor fillers all night. If you are up in London and fancy going, then visit the website of QX Magazine or pick up a copy from gay coffee shops, retail stores and the like. LGBTQ Nation reports that a historic ruling released this week from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court will make it significantly easier for LGBTQ plus parents in the state to secure legal rights over their children. The ruling established intent-based parentage as a new path to legal parenthood, allowing someone to prove legal parentage based on evidence of intent to be a child's parent, regardless of whether or not there is biological relation all written contracts in place. Tamara Kelly of Tbilisi Pride in Georgia writes this week, anti-LGBT plus laws are the first sign that democracy is being fundamentally attacked. We, queer people, are the first targets of the rising authoritarian wave. If the EU does not take action now, what later will be too late, because the erosion of human rights and destruction of the principles of democracy will reach a much wider population. It always starts with queer people, but it never ends with us. LGBTQIA activist network All Out adds, across Europe, governments are copying harmful anti-LGBT plus laws, banning discussions on gender and sexuality, erasing LGBT plus identities from schools and media, and silencing those who speak out for equality. What started in Russia is rapidly spreading to Hungary, Bulgaria, and Georgia. But who's next? Romania has already attempted to ban on discussing gender in classrooms, and Italy is trying to ban what they call gender theory in schools. These rollbacks are not isolated incidents. They are well-organized, strategic attacks fueled by anti-LGBT plus forces that want to roll back our rights. That's why LGBT organizations from 5 countries have come together to respond together, strategically and in solidarity. The EU has the power to intervene, but only if we make our voices heard. A petition urging the swift and decisive intervention by the European Union is available now on the All Out website. Looking for that perfect summer present for the conservative Trump sympathizing relative in your life, or maybe just after something for yourself? Well, there will be many radical queer activist books available at the Upstate New York Anarchist Book Fair, which takes place on May the 3rd and 4th at 21 Emma Street, Binghamton. Doors are open between 12 noon and 8 p.m. on both days. All aspects of the counterculture and political movements against the extreme right will be there. Come and get inspired and network to your heart's content. Lesbian magazine Diva is hitting the newsstands again once this month and features a revealing sit-down interview with radio presenter, political polymath and rabble-rousing singer Skin from the very queer Skunk Anansie band. Formed in 1994, Skunk Anansie would go on to sell 5 million records worldwide, go on tour with icons like David Bowie and Lenny Kravitz, and perform across the world. They made history time and again with their sound, with Skin even becoming the first black woman to headline Glastonbury with an awe-inspiring 1999 performance. Skin has lots to say in the interview, but succinctly warns of the very small number of lesbians who do not like transgender women that they should be wary. She says, "Trans rights are our rights. If they're going for those people, then they'll go for you too." The ancient festival of Beltane is approaching on the horizon. The important pagan festival survives in much traditional English folklore and corresponds to May Day, when the abundance of spring is everywhere. The Radical Fairies of Albion, a group that welcomes queer men, gay, fae people, and countercultural homosexuals of all genders and sexualities, says that its May Day celebrations will take place in the historical and spiritual centre of Glastonbury, where this programme goes out on the local community station on 107.1 FM. They report, 10 days of sacred communal magic awaits us at Paddington Farm near Glastonbury. We gather at the farm from 8th to the 18th of May. For further information on the event, including all aspects of accessibility, politics, workshops and financing, visit their website at the Friends of Albion. Fairies of Albion, I beg your pardon. And finally, we stay with paganism in news from Britain's largest and, to our knowledge, only pagan radio station, Wildwood Radio. For several weeks, the station had taken the decision to turn off its streams to the United States to protest against the belligerent Trump regime's treatment of the Ukrainian president. However, after around 10 days of this policy, and noting that there are several pagan stations already available in the States, the Wildwood programmes resumed for American listeners. Hearn, the station controller, said, "The current state of affairs in the world is a state I never believed I would see in my lifetime. I don't think anyone would. And it breaks my heart to see so much hostility, division and conflict at a point where our efforts should be focused not only on repairing the environment, but on repairing the damage done by COVID and other issues affecting so many of us and the wider world. I want to make it clear that I detest being political, but when the politics has a negative, or in the case of current affairs, dangerous effect on so many people, who of any honour can stand by and do nothing? We as human beings have a moral obligation to help one another. Suspending our stream anywhere is not something we did lightly, but for obvious reasons, we are not streaming in Russia or Israel to this date either." The station noted, "Team Wildwood is entirely neurodivergent, with LGBTQIA+ members and a Ukrainian refugee. We take human rights, war crimes and injustice very seriously, as we do environmental and animal rights. Some of us actively support Amnesty International, Survival International and other global charities. The current state of the world, far-right growth, Russian interference and ongoing conflict causes us deep concern, and we will continue to act with integrity," he concluded. Well, once again, we have reached the end of Shoutout News. If you want to keep up to date with what is happening in the world, remember to include podcasts, LGBTQIA+ streaming services and websites, the printed gay press and community radio stations in your input. You can always visit our website. We are at shoutoutradio.lgbt. For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
and welcome back to Queer Story. Today's pod is about Bayard Rustin. Bayard was central to the Black Civil Rights Movement and a proponent of non-violent protests. He was a friend and mentor to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the principal organiser of the landmark 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. He was a Quaker, an openly gay man, and an advocate of gay and lesbian rights. Rustin was born in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and raised by his maternal grandparents, Julia and Jennifer Rustin, as the ninth of their 12 children. Growing up, he believed his biological mother was his older sister. His grandparents were relatively wealthy local caterers who raised Rustin in a large house. Julia Rustin was a Quaker, although she attended her husband's African Methodist Episcopal Church. She was also a member of the National Association for the Advancement of Coloured People, NAACP. NAACP leaders, whereas W.E.B. Du Bois and James Weldon Johnson, were frequent guests in the Rustin home. With these influences in his early life, in his youth, Rustin campaigned against racially discriminatory Jim Crow laws. One of the first documented realizations Rustin had of his sexuality was when he mentioned to his grandmother that he preferred to spend time with males. She responded, "I suppose that's what you need to do." In 1932, Rustin entered Wilberforce University, a historical black college in Ohio operated by the AME Church. Rustin was active in a number of campus organizations. He was expelled from Wilberforce in 1936 after organizing a strike and later attended Cheney State Teachers College. He became a Quaker in 1936, shortly before moving to New York, where he lived most of his adult life. He was known by all as a pacifist and a primary influence in bringing non-violent resistance into the American civil rights movement, much inspired by Gandhi's approach in India. In his own words, Bayard said, "My earliest memory of having anything to do with the civil rights movement is indelible because it's one of the rare memories I have of my father, who died in 1970. He was lying on the sofa in the living room of our small apartment watching Dr. Martin Luther King's funeral on the television following King's assassination in April 1968. I was 9 years old. While I have only the fuzziest memory of the black and white images on the TV screen, I will never forget the tears streaming down my father's face. It was the first time I'd ever seen him cry. My real introduction to the civil rights movement came in junior high school. My choir teacher, who was African American, led a concert every year in honor of Dr. King on King's birthday and included in our rehearsal discussions about the history of the movement. In 1941, he joined the Pacifist Fellowship of Reconciliation. He protested against segregation within the armed forces and worked with the American Friends Service Committee to protect the property of interned Japanese Americans. Despite his membership of the Society of Friends, Rustin was jailed in 1944 for his conscientious objection to cooperating with the draft. While in jail, he organized protests against segregated seating in the dining hall. In a letter to the prison, he wrote, "Both morally and practically, segregation is to me a basic injustice. Since I believe it to be so, I must attempt to remove it. There are three ways in which one can deal with an injustice. A, one can accept it without protest. B, one can seek to avoid it. C, one can resist the injustice non-violently. To accept it is to perpetuate it." Rustin travelled widely and obtained 5 years of university schooling at the City College of New York and other institutions without taking a degree. It is said that he became a foe of racial segregation and a lifelong believer in pacifist agitation. Rustin was arrested in California in 1953 after he was discovered having sex with a man. He served 50 days in jail and was registered as a sex offender. While his sexual orientation resulted in him taking a less public role, he was hugely influential within the civil rights movement. In an article titled Remembering Bayard Rustin, the Man Behind the March on Washington, Rund Abdelfattah shared that in the mid-1950s, Rustin became a close advisor to the civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., and he was a principal organizer of King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference. In August 1963, Rustin became the chief architect of the March on Washington, a huge demonstration of rally to support civil rights legislation that was pending in Congress. In 1964, he directed a one-day student boycott of New York City's public schools in protest against racial imbalances in the system. Rustin subsequently served as president of the A. Philip Randolph Institute, a civil rights organization in New York City from 1966 to 1979. Soon thereafter, he became involved in the gay rights movement. Run shares on the morning of August 28, 63, in Washington, D.C., as the sun began to peek over the horizon, it was very quiet on the National Mall. Too quiet for organizers of the historic March on Washington. Nobody knew exactly how many people would come, recalls Norman Hill, a young activist and labor leader at the time. Organizer and transportation director Rachel Horowitz estimated 90,000 people would be there based on the number of buses that had been chartered. But by the end of the day, an estimated 250,000 people from across the country had marched on Washington. The crowd were uplifted by the emotional strength and prophetic quality of the address given by Martin Luther King Jr. that came to be known as the I Have a Dream speech, in which he emphasized his faith that all men someday would be brothers and his hope that one day his children would live in a nation where they would not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. The rising tide of civil rights agitation greatly influenced national opinion and resulted in the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, guaranteeing equal voting rights, outlawing discrimination in restaurants, theatres and other public accommodations involved in interstate commerce, and encouraging school desegregation. Run stated that just a few weeks before the march, Rustin had come under attack. He was an easy target, a socialist, a pacifist who refused to fight in the war and went to prison for it, and a gay black man at a time of intense homophobia. He'd been attacked before for being gay, each time forcing him to retreat out of the spotlight. This time the attacks came on the floor of the US Senate. The segregationist Senator Strom Thurmond accused Rustin of being a sex pervert and draft dodger. He hoped by discrediting Rustin he'd also put a stop to the march. But soon after, the director of the march and prominent leader of the civil rights movement, A. Philip Randolph, gave a press conference defending Rustin, and the march went on as planned. Rund said that Bayard Rustin was a sum of many, sometimes contradictory parts, and while his contributions are often overlooked, he was instrumental in the movement and the architect of one of the most influential protests in American history. In a way, that was his greatest gift, the ability to imagine a different world and rally everyday people to build that world with him. Those who knew him remember his charisma, his kindness, his slight British accent, and his tendency to break out into song. And they remember him as a master strategist. For decades before the march, Rustin had been organizing protests, marches, sit-ins, spreading the gospel of nonviolent resistance long before Dr. King came on the national stage. In fact, Rustin's surviving partner, Walter Neagle, describes him as a mentor to Dr. King. For the remainder of his life, Rustin turned his attention toward issues like economic injustice, gay rights, and anti-colonialism. He received criticism from some within the civil rights movement for his political views, namely his tepid opposition to the Vietnam War, his conservative stance on things like affirmation action, and his support of Israel. He died in New York City in 1987 on the outskirts of the movement. In 2013, Bayard was posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. In 2020, Rustin was pardoned for his 1953 conviction. To finish, I would like to share some of Bayard's own words. If we desire a society of peace, then we cannot achieve such a society through violence. If we desire a society without discrimination, then we must not discriminate against anyone in the process of building this society. If we desire a society that is democratic, then democracy must become a means as well as the end. The only way to reduce ugliness in the world is to reduce it in yourself. And lastly, to be afraid is to behave as if the truth were not true. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Queer Story. I will be back in 2 weeks' time to share another story with you all. If you have any feedback, why not tweet us at shoutout_radio.
shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
There you go. Benny Benassi. Ooh.
I know, with Gary Go. Where did he go? I wonder
not
how
to
these,
the awards.
Well, no, obviously not. But I wonder how these artists come up with some of these names. Benny Benassi and Gary Go.
I think Benny Benassi's made that one, isn't it? It's an artist, I'm sure, that has multiple names. So they used to do that a lot in the 90s, you remember?
Yeah.
One person would release lots of tracks under different names for each one.
Yeah, I think that track is from the noughties, I think.
All right, cool. It was interesting hearing in the news that Love Muscles coming back. Mm. I remember going to that when I was like 19.
Yep.
Because God, I love Muscle.
I bet you do.
I don't mind it either.
You know this broadcast is controlled by Ofcom, right?
I'm very specific, though.
One
does love swimmer's muscles. His name rhymes with rainy.
Okay.
Daily.
Oh. Well, sort of. That's a almost right.
Yeah, almost.
Rayleigh.
Yes.
Right, as we're running out of time, Andy, do you think we should go through the awards, who's actually won, so the stations who were broadcasting this over the weekend and the listeners can find out who actually won specific awards? Over to you, Andy.
Okay, so your first category, performers, artists and writers. Our first award was for Best Performance Group or Show. Your finalists were Bristol Gay Men's Chorus, the Bristol Drag Theatre Company, Slaughterhouse and Bristol Enharmonique, and your winner was the Bristol Drag Theatre Company. Best drag artists, your finalists were Miss Jam Tart, Spankin' Cynthia, Alyssa Vandell, Test Drive, and lovely King Henry. And your winner was Miss Jam Tart. Then best community radio show. Can't not have that in there when we're a community radio ourselves, can we? Your finalists were Pillow Talk on BCFM, The World with Miranda on Ujima FM, and Tristan B's Lunchtime on BCFM. And your winner was, do you remember?
Pillow Talk.
Yeah. Then next category was events. First one was best free event. We had Sunday Service, which takes place at Shemo's O'Donnell's. Butts Quiz at the Old Castle Green. And a slightly more serious one, the World AIDS Day Vigil that Brigstow holds. And the winner of that one was Sunday Service at Shemo's O'Donnell's. Then you have Best Festival. Your finalists were Bath Pride, Trans Pride Bristol, and amazingly WOMAD. I thought it was great WOMAD made it into the awards. Unfortunately, they weren't the winners, though. The winners were Trans Pride Bristol. Well done to them. Very well deserved. Our next award was Best Newcomer Event. And we had the Club Night Fist Bristol as one of your finalists. The Drag Panto, which is by the Bristol Drag Theatre Company, and Bath Pride were all up this time, because it has to be since the last awards. Of course, every 2 years you get quite a bit of a newcomer bit. But your winner was the Drag Panto. And then finally, in events, Best Community Event, we have Pride Cat, at the Rainbow Cafe, which is organised by Gay West, and Vosker's Networking Events. And our winners was the lovely people at Gay West with Rainbow Cafe. Our next lot was groups and organisations. Only a couple of awards in this one this year. First one, though, was for Best Support Group or Organisation. It's lovely people in this one. Brigstow, Freedom Youth, stroke Off the Record, because kind of known by both. The Plus Importance Project and Vosker were all in there. And our winners were our lovely friends at Brigstow. Then we have Best Sports or Activities Group, Outdoor Lads, Queer Hiking Bristol, our friends at Bristol Swifts, which is badminton, and the Trans Pride Board Gaming Group were in there. Quite a close fought one, this one. But the winners were Queer Hiking Bristol. Then we moved on to places and people. Our first one was Best Queer Space, and your finalist was North Somerset LGBT Forum. Our lovely friends at the Old Castle Green. They were in it last year, the Watershed and Queen Chilling, and newcomer this year, Seamus O'Donnell's. And our winner for Best Queer Space was the lovely Queen Chilling. Very well deserved. Then on to Best Bar. Again, another one that they go mad for, this one, and it was very heavily fought, this one. Your finalists were Old Market Tavern, the Old Castle Green, the Phoenix, and Seamus O'Donnell. So very Bristol this time. And the winners were the Old Castle Green. And of course, you can't have Best Bar without Best Bar Person. So we've got to find out who you think's the nicest of that lot. And your finalists were Steve Cardwell from Bristol Bear Bar, Paul Homer from the Old Castle Green, Paul Bayford from Seamus O'Donnell's, and Ethan Bond from the Queen's Shilling. And adding a second award for the Old Castle Green, your winner was Paul Homer. So then on to the big ones, which is our gold awards. Your diversity champion of the year, Sabrina from Trans Pride Bristol, and Paula Coonerty were all up, and Sabrina was our lovely winner. Most diverse company, we had Bristol Waste Company, Duchess Media, Burgess Salmon, and Rolls Royce all in there. And Rolls Royce were our winners. Then your Make It Happen Awards, it was Jane Graham McMurrow, Jane Weston, Thomas Fielding, and Lindsay Love. And your winner there was Jane Graham McMurrow. Second for last year, Inspirational Role Model of the Year, ADHD, who won Hero of the Year last year, Tia Kofi, Jordan Chan, and Adam Kahn. And the winner was the lovely Jordan Chan, who you may remember we interviewed. He entered Mr. Gay, Great Britain. And then finally, the big one of the lot, Hero of the Year, was Paul Studley, Mike Coe, and Bowen Reynolds were all up for awards. And the lovely Paul Studley was our winner. So well done to him and the Queen's Shilling. There you go.
Thank you, Andy.
Anyway, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed both today's show and the ceremony itself. You can listen to the ceremony again if you haven't. It's available on bcfmradio.com/shows. It's also available on Shoutout's website, shoutoutradio.lgbt. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, we will see you next week. From myself, from Terry, from Steph, and from Ez, say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.